Now, you know, it may be the offseason in the NBA right now, okay? But who would have known that a one-on-one conversation with Kevin Durant and Draymond Green last week would draw us as much attention as it has so far? Oh, you know we're going to go ahead and dive into that. Interesting comments from tennis player Naomi Osaka last week. I got the sound for you on that, too, in case you missed it. Hey, y'all. I had a lot of fun with the line segment last show. I got another special guest on the line with me breaking it all down who's doing big things in the world. Stay tuned, y'all. It's 94 Feet. So college football is just around the corner at this point. We got the NFL preseason games going on. The WNBA is always exciting. And we got the MLB who's preparing for the playoffs. As always, guys, it is a great time to be a sports fan. Welcome on into 94 Feet. This is your host, B.O.D.A. here with you. I hope you guys are doing well today. I cannot believe the summer is almost over. And we're getting ready to transition into the best month of the year. And I say that because I am a September baby. So I always look forward to the month of September. Shout out to all my September listeners out there. Yes, I may be a little bit biased, but it's all good. We're not going to talk about that. For any of you guys that are new, I encourage you to hit that subscribe button. A lot of fun things planned for today's show. I have a special guest coming on for the line segment at the end today. Her name is Haiti Cepeda. She will be joining us. Just talking to us about some of the things that she's doing in the world lately. She's out here killing the game, guys. So I'm excited. I'm excited to get into that portion of the show and just, you know, get to talking with her. What we're going to do, we're going to go ahead and get into what's on my mind, and then we will skip crunch time and get right on into the Lions segment today, guys. So first thing I wanted to hit on today is Naomi Osaka, who spoke to the media twice last week for the first time since the 2021 Olympics. I do want to share the sound bites with you guys. I have two different ones. We're going to start out with the first one. There's two different articles that are up on ESPN's pages as well, which I will have you in the comments in case you want to check it out. This is where I'm actually pulling the audio from. So let's have a listen to the first one.
Follow up on that last question. You're not crazy about dealing with us, especially in this format. Yet you have a lot of outside interests that are served by having a media platform. I guess my question is, how do you balance the two? And also, do you have anything you'd like to share with us about what you did say to Simone Biles?
When you say I'm not crazy about dealing with you guys, what does that refer to?
Guys, right here, the reporter repeats the same question that he repeated in the beginning. I'm just skipping right to Naomi's response.
That's interesting. I would say the occasion, like when to do the press conference, is what I feel is the most difficult. But Sorry, I'm thinking. I mean, for me, I feel like this is something that I can't really speak for everybody. I can only speak for myself. But ever since I was younger, I've had a lot of media interest on me. And I think it's because of my background as well as, you know, how I play. Because in the first place, I'm a tennis player. That's why a lot of people are interested in me. So I would say in that regards, I'm quite different to a lot of people, and I can't really help that there are some things that I tweet or some things that I say that kind of create a lot of news articles or things like that. And I know that it's because I've won a couple Grand Slams and I've gotten to do a lot of press conferences that these things happen. But I would also say, like, I'm not really sure how to balance the two. Like, I'm figuring it out at the same time as you are, I would say.
Okay. Thank you, Paul. We're going to do four more questions, or four more journalists. We're going to go Courtney, Jeff, Stuart, and then Ben Rothenberg. So Courtney, please go ahead and state your name and publication, please. Thank you.
Courtney Nguyen, WTA Insider. Hello, Naomi. Hopefully it's okay if I ask a couple of tennis questions. The first one is just how the training has been and how your preparation has been for the summer hard court swing. And the second one is just related to your tweet over the weekend related to what's going on in Haiti. Just what your reaction is to the news there. Thank you. Sorry.
No, you're super good.
Okay, I think we're just going to take a quick break. We'll be back in one moment.
So I have absolutely no problem with the media member's question in regards to asking her, how does she balance her responsibilities of the media with her outside interests? I have no problem with that at all whatsoever. You know, and I've mentioned it before. Let's not forget, Osaka's income for the year 2020 was $55 million at the age of 22, 23 years old. $55 million. You can watch her play and know immediately that there's nothing average about her game. The girl can play some tennis, believe me. In the year 2020, Osaka brought in $55 million. $5 million of that amount was compensation for the matches that she competed in. The other $50 million, endorsements. Endorsements. And my thing is, how many endorsements can an athlete gather without the support of the media, shining light on their victories, their play, their prowess? How many? It helps. It definitely helps. And I think the other thing that caught my eye in this first soundbite that we just listened to is she literally says, that's interesting. And what I draw from that is that I think for the first time, she had a moment to really think about this in a new way. She had a moment to really think about how the media supports some of those personal interests. Another takeaway is that I appreciate her honesty. She straight up told the gentleman, at times, it's the occasion as to when your press conferences occur is what makes them difficult to attend and to speak. And she told him, honestly, right now at this moment, I'm not sure how to manage the two at this time. She's not sure. And she mentions, you know, from a young age, she's always had media coverage. Episodes in the past, I've shared with you guys how I give a lot of credit to LeBron James as an individual. This is a man who skipped college, drafted into the NBA at 18, 19 years old. For the most part, has had to grow up while in a major profession. LeBron and Naomi are not exempt from the challenges an individual faces during their early years of childhood. Growing up can be tough. They dealt with the same things you and I dealt with once, and now just add fame, money, and athletics on top of it. That can be tough to manage, in my opinion, if you think about it from their perspective. The reporter went on to ask her more about the devastation in Haiti, but we'll touch on that in just a second. Let's have a quick listen to her most recent comments. This was, I believe, late Wednesday. It got released on Thursday, though. Thursday of last week. Let's have a listen.
Honestly, I was thinking about this since the last time I sat here. I was wondering why was I so affected, I guess? Like, what made me not want to do media in the first place? And then I was thinking, I'm wondering if I was scared because, like, sometimes I would see headlines of, like, players losing, and then the headline the next day would be, like, a collapse, or, like, they're not that great anymore. So then I was thinking, me waking up every day, for me, I should feel like I'm winning, you know? Like, the choice to go out there and play, to go see fans, that people come out and watch me play, that itself is an accomplishment. And I'm not sure when along the way I started desensitizing that. Like, it started not being like an accomplishment for me. So I felt like I was very ungrateful on that fact. And then I don't know. Like, I think definitely this whole COVID thing was really stressful with the bubbles and not seeing people and not having, like, the interactions. But I think, like, I guess seeing the state of the world, like, how everything is in Haiti, how everything is in Afghanistan right now is definitely really crazy. And for me to just be hitting a tennis ball in the United States right now and have people come and watch me play is... I don't know. Like, I would want to be myself in this situation rather than anyone else in the world.
So what we hear this time around is her mentioning the pressure of having to perform and the concerns that come out of it when she may be having an off night. Ultimately, she went on to say that that wasn't it. But from what I understand from her is that she lost some of the joy of what it was like to actually wake up and just go out there and play tennis. And to some extent, you know, she mentions, you know, just waking up and having fans coming to see her play, she called it, it's an accomplishment. That's what she said. She later mentions the issues going on in Afghanistan and the earthquakes that hit the country in Haiti. And in light of just how big these events were, what? That being out there just playing tennis just has a new feel for her. Sometimes it didn't really feel like the right thing to be doing in light of what was going on. You know, and I love these kinds of interviews, you know, because one, it just helps us to see more about the true essence of these people, helps us to see the heart of these people. You know, I love the awareness that Osaka has, you know, in terms of other things that are going on in the world today. And while we're on this topic, I do just want to take a break. I want to give some credit to Kyrie Irving. I've been quick to come down on him in the past for some of his off the court decisions and actions. But I believe you got to give credit where credit is due. And in this respect, I want to give credit to Irving, who recently took it upon himself last month to ensure that there was clean water for families in the city of Pakistan. There was an article that was released on RevoltTV.com, and the title, I will have this in the comments if you want to take a quick look at it. The title for the article says, over 100 villagers will have access to clean water, lights, fans, and a small farm to assist with food sustainability. Wow. You know, life can get busy sometimes. And it's very easy to overlook the simplicities of life. I mean, we're talking food, water, lights, even just basic mobility. The fact that you can get up and walk from one room to another. You know, your vision, your ability to sit up out of the bed in the morning. In our day-to-day schedules, you know, we kind of forget about these things. And I think it's important that we give credit to athletes like Irving who go out of their way to ensure that others have their basic necessities. So going back to Osaka overall, I think she said it best. She's still trying to figure out how to balance the media along with her other responsibilities. And she's so young, guys. She's so young. I mean, that's what I try to keep in mind. You know, she is a young adult, but this is a person that probably has been dealing with, she said, media coverage from a young age. I mean, think about it, you know, probably from the age of 17 years old, 16, 17 years old. You know, that's tough. Like I said, and even when you think about just trying to still be a person, still dealing with the same old things that me and you had to deal with, on top of that, it can be tough. It can be tough. I gotta be honest, you know, I respect it. As I really try to put myself in her position, being at such a young age, with the attention of millions on you 24/7, speaking with adults who are probing you for question after question to ensure that they what? That they get the right responses to formulate a good story, contracts, endorsements, major decisions to make, pressure to perform well, which you mentioned, and still trying to be a young adult, a teenager, after all that. That can be tough. And I believe we may have to look into something where questions and interviews with the media maybe are limited, or the duration of it is shortened, maybe. I don't think just getting rid of the media completely or giving the athletes the opportunity to skip out because they don't feel like it is the answer. I don't think that's it. I don't think so. Why? Because I believe the sport is driven from the media, and I believe that there's also benefits for the individual themselves. You know, so we got some tough decisions to make. I wouldn't want to be a commissioner or somebody who has to call the shots. The second thing that I wanted to share with you guys today in terms of what was on my mind is last week Bleacher Report released a 25-minute interview between host and Golden State forward Draymond Green and Brooklyn Nets forward Kevin Durant. Both Durant and Green were teammates for three seasons, from October 2016 through June 2019. The two did go on to win two out of the three NBA championships together. I believe that they would have won a third one had it not been for the Achilles tear to KD in Game 5 of the 2019 NBA Finals, and ultimately the torn ACL to Klay Thompson in Game 6. I believe that they would have won three straight. You know, and I'm not going to be able to share the full interview with you guys, but what I have here is I will share a couple of the questions and answers and just give my thoughts in between. This is up on YouTube on Bleacher Report's account. Same thing, I will have the link here in the notes if you want to check it out. Let's have a listen to the first part.
You know, growing up in Saginaw, for me, being the tallest kid, everybody always wanted me to play center. Mm-hmm. And I was fortunate enough to have my uncle who just taught me how to dribble and taught me guard skills. Mm-hmm. But I still always end up throwing at the center. Whereas you're 7 feet, and you'll never admit it, but you're 7 feet. You never played the four in your life till you came to Golden State, really. And
I played a little bit in college because I couldn't dribble that well, but I was still on the perimeter most mm-hmm. of the time.
And when we went small, that's when you would play the four. Whose idea was it, like, to never just stick you on the block because you were always taller than everybody?
Coach Brown and Coach Chucky. Like, they would see me every day just running up and down the court, like, no ball in my hand, just running around with kids. And they seen my agility outside, running, playing football and stuff, so they seen that I wasn't just a stiff. So
you calling me a stiff? All right, man.
I mean, nah, you ain't no stiff, dog. And you're not even big, bro. You're like 6'6", like, and you play bigger than what you really are. But most guys that's tall and skinny, they can't really move at the same time. And, you know, I always wanted to be a point guard and shooting guard. I was just growing so fast, so some coaches did just stick me underneath the basket. But if I get a rebound, I go coast to coast, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. If I shoot a jump shot here and there. So I was showing flashes, but it wasn't like this.
Okay, so Durant gives some credit to his early coaches that really helped develop him as a perimeter player, and then I connected with immediately. Why? Just because growing up with some of the kids that I was around, I was always the biggest kid. You know, so when it comes to basketball, I always got stuck playing the four and the five position, being on the block, rebounding, playing in the post. That was the position I always got stuck with. You know, so I definitely connected with him. And I remember the first time in my life that I had a coach that let me play on the wing for a little bit was when I was in eighth grade. I was 13 years old, and I remember I had always played center. I actually started out playing center. And my coach actually told me, my coach told me during the summer coming into the season, hey, start working on your ball handling. We're going to have you play point guard. I'll never forget it. Never forget it. And that was actually the first time I had a chance to actually play a guard position or play on the wing. That was the very first time. You know, so I connected with that immediately. I knew exactly what he was talking about there. Let's check out the next part where Draymond asked him about his decision departing from OKC.
9 years in OKC, and then you decide that you leave in OKC, and you ultimately decide to come to the Warriors, knowing that the scrutiny would be there, knowing that, you know, everybody would say the Warriors were this great team, but you still ultimately made the decision. Why was that? Was that driven by, I don't give a fuck what y'all think, this is good for me, or was that just, you know, was it strictly just a basketball decision?
It was a basketball decision, but I knocked down the, like, not giving a ladder with that too. You know what I'm saying? It kind of knocked down two birds with one stone with that. But it was mainly, I felt like I was the absolute perfect fit with what you guys were doing on both ends of the ball. And I knew my game had reached a point where I needed to really see what that looked like. And I thought that was just a no-brainer. I would do that a million times. And, you know, again, I didn't second guess at all. And I knew that's what I wanted to do when I was going into these meetings.
Okay, so I agree with that 100%. I truly believe OKC was exciting to watch growing up, but their roles were just not, they weren't there. They weren't solidified. Nobody knew what they were doing. Especially on the topic of whose team was it? Was it KD's? Was it Westbrook? I can't even remember. I would say that span of, so after they went to the championship in 2012, I watched a couple of those highlight games this week where they went up against the Spurs to get to the finals, and then ultimately they lost to the Heat, and the Heat won their first title with LeBron. I thought about that. I was watching those games, and you can just see that there was just so much raw talent. When you look at James Harden, Westbrook, Serge Ibaka, Kevin Durant, I mean, these guys, the potential was definitely there. It was so raw, and they just needed more time to try to cultivate and build something there. So, I mean, I'm a person, I believe that the way we look at Harden, Durant, and Westbrook, their games would not be as revered as they are had they all stayed there together in that team. I will say that, though. Even though I'm mentioning, yeah, they probably needed more time to develop, I don't think they would be as good as what they are today had all those guys stayed together there in that same team. No, I don't see it. Mm-mm. I don't see it. The other thing I was going to say is, going back to the idea of, was it Westbrook's team or was it KD's team? I can even remember, I would say after that championship run, so probably from 2013 up until the time KD left, pretty much it was always like one or the other between Westbrook and KD who was injured. One or the other, one or the other, one or the other. And it was funny because you saw when KD wasn't there, Westbrook looked like a man on a mission. When Westbrook wasn't there and it was just KD, KD looked completely unstoppable. And let's face it, KD got his first MVP in the year 2015. I believe it was the year 2015. So, you know, it was just, you know, you could tell even just watching it. Like I said, I just watched a couple of their games this week. Roles just weren't, you know, nobody knew what it was that they were doing. It just wasn't solidified. Let's have a listen to the next part.
What brought you back to Golden State for year three was just the opportunity to three-peat, but it didn't feel right for you no more. Am I right, wrong?
That's interesting because a lot of people, that's just a talk around me the last few years, and I get what people are saying, because before I got to Golden State, I was just happy-go-lucky, like just bright-eyed to the experience, not knowing what was ahead. By the first year, I knew exactly what we needed to do in order for us to win every night. I knew what my role was to the T. Teams before, I didn't quite know what my role was every night. Did I have to be the scorer? Did I have to be the facilitator? Did I have to get other guys involved? Did I have to make threes? I knew exactly what my role was, and I locked on it with so much focus and determination to not f around every day. And you've seen it. From workouts to practices, shoot-arounds, film, I was super locked in, and it made people on the outside look at me like, hold on, is he enjoying this? When I dive into something like that, with that level of focus, I don't want to be anywhere else in life.
Okay, so KD pretty much told him that the game became easy for him when he knew his role, which is what I was just mentioning to you. When he knew his role. And I think this kind of connects with the first thing that he mentioned in the beginning. He said he talked about what? That his game is cliche. He talked about he's a person that really hammers in on the basics of the game. He just does them well. I agree with that. You know, and again, he says what? That in teams past, his role wasn't always clear. He's clearly talking about OKC. I don't know if he's mentioning anything else from Texas or maybe his time growing up as a kid, but he's clearly talking about OKC, and it was very clear to me. I agree with that. I think this next question is a question that had most people on the edge of their seats to get a response to. Let's check it out.
How much did our argument against the Clippers drive you to ultimately lead the Warriors? It wasn't the argument. It was the way that everybody, Steve Kerr, act like it didn't happen. Bob Myers and tried to just discipline you and think that that would put the mask over everything. I really felt like that was such a big situation for us as a group. The first time we went through something like that, we had to get that all out. I remember watching The Last Dance, and when Scotty didn't go into the game, the whole team in the locker room said, Scotty, that was f***ed up that you did that. We needed that. We just need to throw all of that on the table and say, yo, Dre, okay, like, that was f***ed up that we even had to go through that. Let's just wipe our hands with that and go finish the task. I don't think we did that. We tried to dance around it. I just didn't like how all of that, just the vibe between all of that, it just made weird to me. And I'd rather us be who we say we are, family first. Communication is key. Like, we didn't show that. And that's what rubbed me the wrong way more than anything.
Wow. So it was the way that management handled it, or the way that they didn't handle it, I should say, according to KD. He said he acted what? As if it didn't happen. And that I do believe, because to me, Draymond has already established the guy, you know, who's going to speak his mind. He's already established that. You can argue about KD being soft or whatever, or not being able to take criticism. But we already know, if Draymond has got something to say to you, he's going to say it in whatever way it comes out. And again, I put myself in KD's position. And I think about it. That probably had to be one of the most awkwardest positions to be in. On the floor with KD, but even like he said afterwards, he talked about like, you know, from there, things were just kind of never the same. And my thing is, listen, man, you got to be real with people. You got to be real with people. You got to deal with things right away when they happen. I raise two hands to this. Confrontation is never fun. Never. But brushing it underneath the carpet and not addressing it is not the answer either. Both KD and Draymond said that that was a time, what, for the team, for the coaches and management to come together and squash it and have a real conversation. The uncomfortable one, but the most meaningful one. That was the time, and they missed it. They missed it. I love this next question. Let's have a listen.
To watch you early on in your career, like you said, you was the happy one. You was the kid that carried the backpack. Nike started a backpack line because you always, and you, to this day, you still carry the backpack all the time. And so there's this common misconception that you're not the kid that carries the backpack anymore. I still think you're the kid that loves basketball and carry a backpack.
Yeah.
But over the course of the years, your answers to the media, how you deal with the media has changed. Why is that? Is that just who you grew into? Is that because of the way they act with certain shit? Where did that?
I felt like the media knew more than me. I almost had them on a pedestal of like, they got more history, knowledge of the game. They more experienced than me in this area of the NBA. So once I started to get more experience and realized like, oh, no, they can never be what I am or know what I know or understand it the way I understand it. Some of the questions, you know, they didn't seem so intelligent to me anymore. People wanted to praise me more than I liked or hate me more than I liked, make a big deal out of so much other shit. And I was just like, you know, this game is simple to me. So some of the stuff that y'all asking really doesn't move me the way it used to.
Okay, so KD says what? That he finds some of the questions of the media to be off kilter. They just don't line up. They just don't make sense. All right, that's what he says. So the KD, I say perfectly, I think he's perfectly justified about feeling like, you know, he doesn't have to speak to the media. I think he's perfectly justified. You can feel that way. There's some days I wake up and I don't feel like doing certain stuff. You're allowed to feel that way. That's fine. But I will say the same thing I've been saying before about Osaka. It's important to understand that the purpose of it, which is to drive the sport. Now, I think all media members have to remember that they need to respect the individual that they're speaking to. All questions should be presented in a way, you know, that's pleasing, that's respectful, and that is appropriate, I think. To KD, I said, remember, for the most part, you're still in control of the image, of your image in the public eye. You're still in control of that. When you come and sit down in front of that mic, that's your opportunity to disseminate the message that you want out there. That's your opportunity. And I feel like this year we heard Kyrie Irving speak to his concerns with the off-the-court matters in today's world. And we saw the actions that followed it. Now, the unfortunate thing is there's always one person who will try to take what you say and twist it, unfortunately. You know, sometimes you may go out there and say something and somebody will go and write a story that's completely opposite from what you said. I get that. But my thing is this. A guy like Kevin Durant, who's going to be frequently interviewed, the more times you go out there and you speak about who the true KD is, the true Kevin Durant is, I believe that that is what will win out over the stories that don't necessarily highlight the essence of who you are. That's what I believe. I found this next question to be interesting. Let's have a quick listen to it.
So now you're in this space with the Nets, and you know everybody has made this big deal about Kyrie and you know his beliefs and him missing games, and just like we all do, he got his shit.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are now saying that is what's going to cost y'all ultimately of reaching where y'all want to reach. What do you make of that?
I mean, I just think people don't like Kyrie because he wanted to leave Cleveland and he wanted to leave Boston. I don't think it's any deeper than that. He doesn't harm anyone. He hasn't said anything that's disrespectful to anybody. His game is beautiful to watch. I just think people don't like the decisions on where he chooses to play.
And they sort of amplify everything because everybody in this league has their shit. They mm-hmm. may say something over a course of 6 months that everybody may not agree with. That's just nature of our business. You know, when you're that good at what you do, everything is a little amplified, and sometimes it's a little extra. You know, so what Kyrie does, especially in our building, nobody is making a big deal out of it. We come to work, we handle our business, and you be who you are.
Oh, yeah. Hands down, 100%. I really don't have anything else to add on this one. I agree with it. Kyrie, KD, easily hated for just the decisions that they make. Kyrie leaving Cleveland, going to Boston, leaving Boston, coming to the Nets. Same thing. KD leaving OKC, going to Golden State. I think he mentioned in the interview, he said, you know, he didn't realize how many people just hated Golden State just because of how good they were. And he said, you know, he got a chance to really witness and just feel some of that hate that people just had on them. I agree with that wholeheartedly. I don't have anything else on that. Last two things I want to mention, I definitely want to touch on before we go, is number one, KD says what? That he has no regrets about leaving Golden State. What I take away from that, guys, is make the most of every moment. I think KD recognized, like he said, he recognized how his game would fit in. He went there. He enjoyed the moments. He enjoyed what he could. But when it was over, he left. He also realized he couldn't stay. So to that, I say, make the most of every moment. For the moments that are good, enjoy it. For the moments that are bad, learn what you need to learn. Take the lesson and leave the rest. Make the most out of every moment. And when it's done, keep moving. The second thing he mentioned is that he does not want his future child to have to fill his shoes. And this I love. Let your children live out their own destiny. I think sometimes people can get so caught up in, you know, trying to get children to follow in the same ways as those in the past or parents or you know, siblings. Let every person live out their own destiny. I love this. I love this, love this, love this. Guys, let's go ahead and get on over to the lying segment. I got Haiti waiting for us on the other side. All right, guys. So we're at our final stop here. We're into our lying segment. We're rocking with the same subtitle like last time. What's your story and what did you do with it? I had a lot of fun with this portion of the show. In our previous episode, I was joined by Sashi Rodriguez. If you guys remember, we talked a little bit about grief and how we can support our loved ones and just some of those tough seasons. And she brought a lot of insight. I got to be honest with you, a lot of insight on many different things. So I do encourage you to go back and check it out if you have some time. But today, I am joined by a new guest. And as I was thinking about her, I said to myself, it's hard to find people, you know, who can meet many different needs in multiple areas of your life. But our guest today, in my opinion, carries so much and is a combination of passion, charisma, toughness, and is also very astute. And she continues to find ways to achieve, to grow, and impact this world. And I'm just thrilled we get a chance to actually have her on the show. I am joined today by Haiti Cepeda. Haiti, how you doing today, girl? Talk to me.
Hey, BJ. Thank you so much for having me here. And hello to 94 Feet audience. I am pleased to be here. And I am happy to share a little bit of what I'm doing and what I have going on during this pandemic.
We're now that's what's up. And trust me, we are just glad to have you here. It's going to be a good time. I'm looking forward to it. Let me just say for anybody who's new here and maybe this is your first time listening to the show. Again, I just want to encourage you guys to subscribe if you're enjoying it so far. And again, for anybody else that's new, maybe you're listening, you're trying to figure out, hey, like I heard sports in the beginning, you know, now you guys are doing this, like what's going on? So I'll put it to you like this. You know, sports are cool. You know, sports are great. But in my opinion, after listening to this podcast, you still got to go out there and do life. So my thing is, you might as well leave with something of sustenance, you know, something that you can apply right now to your life, something that's going to benefit you in the future. So we got Haiti online with us today, who's going to share with us where her story is and what she did with it. So Haiti, the floor is yours. Again, congratulations to you on your most recent accolade. Haiti is now certified, guys, and able to teach English as a second language. So tell us a little bit about yourself, you know, where you're from, and of all certifications, Haiti, why ESL?
Okay, so a little bit about me. I was born and raised in Santo Domingo, Dominican Republic. I migrated to the United States when I was 10 years old with my two older brothers and my mom. Nice. My dad was already here. I lived between Jersey City and now Trenton, New Jersey the entire time. So I've been living in Trenton for quite some time. I am bilingual, and which led me to, like you said, the certification, why this one out of all of them. So just like everyone else, we were in mid-pandemic 2020. I decided to just do a little bit of research on something I can do remote from home, since I saw a lot of people were forced to work from home. And although that wasn't the same case with me, I wanted to be able to have something as a backup. You know, you never know when the world can shut down and you need a different income. So I stumbled upon this program, ITA, is International TEFL Academy. Okay. And TEFL being an acronym for Teaching English as a Foreign Language, also ESL. Myself, having English as a second language, I resonated a lot with it when I found it. A little bit about this academy. This academy is worldwide, known for abroad and online teaching. It's highly accredited and it's, of course, internationally known, which sold the automatic traveler in me. Just going abroad has always been a dream of mine. So when I saw that, I'm like, wait, I gotta look into this. So this program is fairly short. It's about 3 to 4 months. Long story short, I enrolled in it and it turned out to be this amazing academy that has connected me with my community here in Trenton, especially the Latino community. And to have the certification and be able to teach someone English as their second language, it's humbling and it's a truly life-changing experience.
Nice. Very cool. Very cool. And it's funny, guys. So maybe you're wondering, you know, what made me want to have Haiti on today. And even before I get into that, I should start with how I actually met her. So I actually met Haiti through her brother. Her brother was the first person within her family that I met. Anthony, who we talked about on the last show with Sashi's son, who no longer is here with us physically, but is still very active and alive in the hearts of many people like myself. Anthony was the middleman of how I met Haiti's brother, Haido. And from Haido, I met Haiti, Haiti's older brother, Andrew, her mom, her dad, pretty much everybody in her family. And it just is a relationship that continues to blossom. But anyway, what made me want to ask Haiti, guys, so I do follow her on her social media. And when I saw the comments on her, I'm sorry, when I saw the description that she had put up when she got her certification in May, the thing that I really connected with most is just the part where she mentioned the frustrations of coming into a new country, coming into a new region, not knowing the language, not knowing the culture, not being able to talk to people. And like I've shared with people before in the past, you know, when you go into visit, maybe even if you're doing just like a missions trip, or like when, you know, when you're in a different region that you're not comfortable with, especially if it's a place where you don't speak the language, like that is there's a moment of just like inner desolation that just kicks in like never before. And if you've never experienced it, it may be kind of hard to understand what I'm talking about, but that's what I connected with most. And just her being able to take those experiences. I think it was something along the lines where she wrote, you know, she was inspired that, you know what, this is what I'm going through. And God willing, if I ever get in a position where I could, you know, make a better life for somebody else so they don't have to walk through what it is that I'm going through, I'm going to do it. And I just think that that's so powerful that, you know, she took what ended up being, you know, what could have been a setback for her and used it as an opportunity to encourage and push other people ahead. And even in the season that you learned it within COVID, where there's so many different people now who are out there looking to learn new activities, new skills, who are learning more about themselves as a result of just the time and the seasons that we're in, I think it's really cool stuff. Really, really cool.
Absolutely. Just like you said, just learning more of ourselves. I never knew I could do it, but here I am. And I'm humbled and I love this experience so far.
Awesome. Let's go ahead and let's dive into the next thing. Share with us a little bit more about your background story and what inspired you.
Okay. So it was tough being in the United States, you know, leaving everything back at home and not knowing the language. Yeah. And it was definitely a journey that we had to get through as a family. It was times where, you know, my brothers didn't want to communicate with other people. Well, on the other hand, I wanted to go outside and try to talk to people. Right. So it was just a big adjustment. And well, it was something that we got through it. Many levels. You know, my mom, it was just a very different feeling being in an area where you can't talk to nobody, or maybe you might wanted to, but I couldn't really get the words through, you know. But the advantage of that was I was fairly young. I was 9 years old and I was willing to kind of try to learn a little bit. My brothers were not so much. So that's where kind of the road bumps came between us, but
it was good.
I feel like our curiosity as a family, we knew we had to learn and we just dived right into it. You know, my mom still is very much bilingual. Okay. She doesn't know that much English, but she's trucking along and that makes our house still bilingual.
Right.
And it has made us grow as a family, you know, learning a new language as a family. So even though it is harder for adults, we still learn with her and we help her.
Right.
Another inspiration is right after we left Jersey City, we came to Trenton. So I've been living in Trenton for about 10 plus years now.
Okay.
This is a totally different community now. It's predominantly black and brown. And majority of the people is actually from Central America. So you see a lot of Guatemalans, you see a lot of Nicaraguans, Honduras, Colombians. So you now know all of a sudden I'm around Spanish people and it's like, okay, now I know English and now I see people that they come to the store and I see how they struggle not knowing English. So I'm like, wow. And you know, I always step in to help. That's just me.
Right.
So, but living in Trenton has definitely showed me the advantage of learning English and seeing it in the other end of when I can help others learn English and get those opportunities that they don't really have access to because of the language barrier.
Right. And just one thing, I just want to touch for our listeners. So they probably may have heard you mention the store. So guys, Hades' father owns almost like a corner store. And they pretty much sell almost everything from fresh food to, you know, little, you know, toiletry items. Maybe you need at the home, you know, whatever it may be. It's your typical bodega.
One-stop shop.
Yes. I mean, it's literally got everything. So that's what she's talking about, just in terms of, you know, just some of the clientele that come in. She's now in a position where she can, you know, just help other people, you know, and be that bridge, be that voice of connection. So that's cool. That's really cool. Did you have any more inspirations you wanted to share? I don't want to cut you off.
No, I was just going to just emphasize on, as I just grew as an adult, you know, I knew that just when it came down to education advantages, you know, scholarships, you know, when you can just type up a simple essay, when I can do them, then I see others that I'm helping now, you know, type up an essay to get a scholarship for education. It's just a lot of access that we typically would have knowing the language versus not has really fueled me to take this certification serious and really help those that I'm already seeing on the daily basis. And maybe that's why I'm exposed to that. And that's really where I'm really getting more of my inspiration from.
Okay. Excellent. That's really cool. So, I mean, talk to us a little bit about your, you know, maybe what you're doing right now with your current occupation, or maybe even just some past jobs that have helped you develop in any way, shape, or form for today or for the future.
So definitely now that since we're talking ESL, I just want to focus on that as well.
Gotcha. No problem.
Not too long ago, I was working at a call center and it was kind of like a part-time, but I was there specifically for bilingual homes.
Okay.
And it was kind of cool that I was specifically for that because I had the gift of being bilingual.
Right.
So I've kind of been exposed to being bilingual at many different work settings that I've been at. Okay. And I'm just now noticing it.
Okay.
You know, I was a manager at a retail store for quite some time at Quakerbridge Mall, and I was the only person of color there, and I was the only one that knew Spanish. So anyone that was Spanish that would come to the store, you know, everybody would like, oh, hey, you got to help them. And, you know, I would be like, I think you got it.
Right.
I think you got it, you know, because I don't always want to knock someone's opportunity to talk the language.
I agree with that.
So, and once I kind of taught them that, they were so respectful of like, let's see, you know, and they were more open to that. So just being, I was a manager for like over 5 years. So I was really in that setting for a long time and really talking to people in like being in my leadership moments and having to, you know, kind of teach others how to talk to clientele, or you know, retail was just, you have to be a people's person. So
and collaborate, you know, learn how to connect with people. It's very important. I agree with you on
that. Yeah. So So just thinking back to all of my jobs, I kind of was always, and even my current job right now, even though it has nothing to do with ESL,
that's okay.
I'm always kind of like, oh, Haiti, can you come translate this? And mm-hmm. I've kind of see so many people that come to the counter, and I say counters because I see a lot of contractors and plumbers.
Right.
And, wow. you know, a lot of people that do that work are typically Spanish too. Right. And uh-huh. I see the need for them wanting to learn and I feel like I can help them too. So right. I don't know. I feel like all of my jobs are kind of teaching me and leaning me towards maybe this is what I should be doing and right. I'm focusing on because it's really all what I'm exposed to.
Right. And that's what's cool too. Like, and that's why I really like this question because I think sometimes, you know, you may have someone who's learning to, maybe somebody wants to go to med school because they want to be a doctor. And I think sometimes maybe before you even get to med school, you can be working a job. You know, maybe at a restaurant on the corner, and maybe you're just, you know, a server, you know, and I think what you find is that when you make it to where it is you want to be, sometimes you look back on your life and you recognize that there were certain positions, certain jobs, maybe responsibilities that you had that really were beneficial and helpful to, you know, I guess helping us arrive where it is that we're going or where it is that we are today. So I think that's what's really cool, like, you know, just being able to pull something from every experience in your life and being able to add that to the future. So it's really cool. I know we kind of dived a little bit into family. Anything else on that one? Just tell us a little bit more maybe about your family that maybe we didn't touch on yet.
So I feel like you kind of pretty much covered it. I mean, I was going to touch bases on how we still talk Spanish because at home because of my mom not knowing so much, but... You know, we're kind of like your typical American dream. You know, gotcha. I know that gotcha. My dad came here to give us a better life. And that alone makes me and my brothers do better.
Right.
As long as they're here with us, you know, it just makes us want to do something. You know, we're given this opportunity that back at home in Dominican Republic, we would never have. You know, there's people back at home that would love to come here.
Right.
And, you know, and being here just kind of opens up our eyes to, you know, be a little more appreciative and take advantage. So my family plays a big part on that as well, you know.
Right.
Just kind of holding me accountable a little bit, like, all right, we got to make it count.
Gotcha. No, that's really cool. That's really cool. And I just thought back, there was something else you had mentioned that I really liked a lot was the opportunity you mentioned, like, yeah, you could easily translate from one language to another for somebody. But like you said, you don't want to step on anyone's toes. Mm-hmm. For their opportunity maybe to practice or work on their English. And just for some of my listeners, if you don't know, so I'm not Hispanic, but I do understand a good portion of Spanish. And I've even run into the same situation where I've met people who were Hispanic that knew a little bit of English. And even though I can tell the English may not have been perfect, I would still speak with them in English and try yes. to speak to them a little bit slow to give them that opportunity to practice. Now, in certain cases, when they found out I knew Spanish, they would just talk to me in Spanish and say, yo, why did you just tell me you knew Spanish? I said, well, I just figured maybe you wanted to work in English. That was the way I saw it. So
exactly.
I mean, yeah, I think, you know, it just depends on the person. And for any of my listeners that don't know, brief story, how did I figure out Spanish? Again, I'm not Hispanic. I'm not from a Latin family. One of my good friends I went to high school with is Costa Rican. For many years, used to always invite me, yo, you got to come with us. You got to come with us. You got to come with us. And growing up as a kid, my thought always was, I never left the country, and there's no way my mom has let me leave the country. No need for me to go ahead and ask the questions. I was like, well, I'm not even worried about it. And eventually, there came a time where he asked me again. I said, well, you know, I'm a little bit older now. I was about 18, 19 years old. I said, you know what? I'm coming. I said, so you know what? I took the whole year. I started putting money away. I had a job. You know, I wasn't making too much, but I was very responsible. I knew how to be disciplined. So I started putting money away. He took me to Costa Rica for the first time. That was August of 2014. So that's 7 years ago from where we are right now. And I remember I was there for 2 weeks and I loved everything from the adventures, the people, the family, everything we did. But the one thing that killed me the most was I couldn't talk to nobody. I couldn't communicate with anybody. And I remember it was that trip. I said to myself, you know what? When I get back to the United States, I say, yo, I'm going to learn Spanish. I said, I don't know how, but I'm going to figure it out. So I was listening to music. I was reading books. I was watching TV shows. Yes, I was watching novellas. I'm not even going to lie.
They come in handy.
I mean, yeah, listen, you get a good taste of vocabulary in there too. So, I mean, I was literally doing everything it took to figure it out. And I was very just determined, you know, and I was very fortunate to spend my final semester of college in Spain. I was in Spain for about 6 months. When I came back from there, I had it. And then from there, pretty much, it was just a matter of learning how to adjust to the way everybody pretty much speaks. So I'm not perfect at it. I don't speak as good as Haiti, but listen, I can hold my own. I can hold a conversation. So I'll leave it at that, y'all.
Nah, BJ, you nailed it though. You know, that keyword is determination, you know, like
right.
We struggle. I still struggle. You know, there's certain words that I struggle and I will have to like say it to my phone so it can type it out because right. not even spell check can help me.
Right.
You know, so gotcha. But being determined to learn that language is just really that key element, and everyone has that. And it takes time, you know, it takes time. When you want to learn something and it can be frustrating at times and it feels like you're not going to get it, but you know, it takes time and everyone's determined.
Yeah.
At one point there will be, you know, because it's in there, you just got to give them time.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I agree. I mean, that's really what gets you through. I always tell people, you know, if you're passionate, you'll be there because the thing is, people are going to come when you're learning. And you're going to wake up and just say, man, I'm not feeling it today. But it's those who are passionate that will kind of pull you through those moments and pull you through those days so you can keep achieving, so you can keep pushing forward. So my next question for you, Haiti, I was wondering, you know, we live in a country, like you mentioned, that is very diverse. I don't even know what the statistics are like now. I'd have to look it up. But there was a time when the Latin race was actually number two in the country. I don't know what it is today. Talk to us a little bit about what's it like being Latina in the United States?
Okay, well, that's a good question, by the way, because it's so broad, but yet so precise,
right?
Being that I'm a Latina, you know,
right.
I think that is definitely an experience and a most definitely a journey. And like every journey is a roller coaster. You have a lot of ups, a lot of downs. I feel like we have many expectations to meet, whether it's family-wise, culture-wise, socially. When it comes to education, to work ethic, to our knowledge, and not even taking into consideration that we have to learn an entire new language. But being in the United States and being a Latino and Latina, they're kind of like already expecting you to show your worth.
That's
how I kind of feel like, you know? So it's kind of, it can be a little, it feels like maybe like overwhelming or pressure at times.
Okay.
Because you have so many different people counting on you. But nonetheless, it's very rewarding because every year it's never the same, you know, every day is not the same.
Right.
So when you graduate high school, when you pass a class, when you get a job, or those are victories along the journey of being a Latino person. Like touching back to even the opportunities. Like if I didn't know the English that I know now, I wouldn't have had the jobs that I have now, you know?
Right.
And I have friends that I've been to high school with and they still don't know much English. And one of them, it's an Uber driver. Granted, he probably makes more money than me.
Okay.
Because, you know, Uber right now has been big and he does it full time. But it just showed me the difference, you know. I'm not saying that I'm corporate, but or that I'm any better than him. But it's just different opportunities that we have available to us when we know a language. And
I agree.
So it's just seeing that growing up and seeing how many people have different perspectives or ways to go about things is just overall, generally speaking, to each their own sort of. However, you kind of, that's kind of like makes you think, okay, well, I guess I'm doing okay. Like I took this gift, I managed it, I mastered it, and now I can help others. And that's kind of like where I'm going towards with my gift, you know?
That's pretty cool. That's really cool. I mean, and the thing is, I don't even think it's pride, like you were saying, you know, just talking about like just the difference in of I guess market of availability when it comes to jobs per person. I mean, it's not even so much pride. I can speak to that and I can agree that, you know, there are different things that just open up, you know, with the more that you know, with the more that you understand. You know, even on a smaller scale, I would just say relationships. You know, I told you guys relationships, I said it's one of the best currencies of life. You know, I'll prime example, I'm on the phone yesterday with one of my friends who doesn't live in this country, lives in Costa Rica. And guess what? I met my original friend that I told you guys that took me to Costa Rica, who I found a friendship with somebody else who lives in Costa Rica, who actually introduced me to somebody else who lives in Costa Rica. And again, if I didn't know Spanish, I couldn't even have that conversation that I had last night. So I'm saying again, you know, you talk about the beauty of, you know, how knowing a language, you know, what that leads to, what kind of opportunities, what kind of friendships, you just never know. You never know, you know, so I think that's pretty cool. Like just being able to, you know, shed some light on it. You know, it is something to be proud of, you know, and you worked hard, you know, and you should be proud of yourself. So I think we kind of talked about it a little bit when we mentioned, you know, what inspires you, but I ask you, like, what are your passions?
So I just have a huge giving heart. If anyone knows me, I will help you any way I can, any way, shape or form. If you need me, I'm there. So my passion, one of my biggest passion is like giving back. So any way that I can, whether it's I volunteer, I help. Actually now I'm actually going to start giving out classes, not by myself, but I work with, a nonprofit organization here in Trenton. It's called the Latin American Legal Defense and Education Fund.
Okay, cool.
So I will give you the link so they can check it out. It is here in Trenton, but it is Mercer County based. Is a nonprofit organization. So I volunteer there as a teacher. I teach adults level one English.
Nice.
And it's just a really good organization. And I'm kind of really, really much so devoted because it's very personal. They're very engaging. They help with DACA. They help you with getting you an ID if you're undocumented. They help you getting a lawyer if you need one, or, you know, keep the community together, kind of have a really good connections with the bilingual department too. So this is a pretty big organization here in Trenton that I've been volunteering with as of recently, and they have kind of broadened my passion more to give back to the community.
Mm-hmm.
And so just giving back, it's one of my biggest passions. And I want to say kids too, I'm passionate about them.
Nice.
They're the future, you know, just the future alone. I just want to see the change that, you know, we have to be the change that we want to see.
Right.
So I have my nephew, which I love with my entire life. So I'm kind of much the cool aunt.
He is cute.
So it's just having that trust that I can talk to and counsel kids. You know, I was very attached to my counselor, and even that made me open up with kids. So I'm very good with kids. I'm very passionate of just building those special connections with anyone, you know.
Nice.
You know, you never know who needs a listening ear or someone to talk to. So, I'm pretty big on just, you know, giving back and trying to shape the future a little bit.
Right. And that's cool. Like, and I think, you know, the first thing you mentioned was giving. Giving is really not that difficult. You know, when you take a moment just to just think, you know, and it's, you know, it can be very simple. And I just share a brief example, and not that we planned on talking about this, but I remember seeing you share it like on your social media. Obviously, we know just where we are within our country, like the government has given out, you know, a bunch of stimulus checks just to help people get ahead and, you know, meet some of their daily expenses. I even remember Haiti, where one of them had come out and I had saw you sharing your social media. Hey, I would love to be able to give somebody with lunch today. How simple is that? I mean, that's not a difficult task. Many of us can do that. You know, so you talk about this idea of giving, and I don't even think it always has to be monetary. I think, you know, we can give for a time. You know, we can give of, you know, we can give ourselves in many ways. Haiti's giving of herself right now by helping me out with this podcast today. So, I mean, I think, you know, it doesn't always have to be, you know, when I get $1,000, I'll be able to, it doesn't even take all that, you know? So I think just take a moment just to slow down, you know, and think about some of these things, you know, and you just find ways where you can continue to impart onto other people, which is really cool. So, Haiti, just to help our listeners get a better feel for just the person that you are, give us like your top 3 to 5 biggest hobbies. What do you like to do?
So I love to travel, which hopefully I get to teach around the world.
Right.
English. So I'm huge in traveling. I love to, now that I know that I can travel places, I recently went to Costa Rica and it's a beautiful country. Yeah. I've been to a few good places, and I've just been very passionate of knowing that I can go to different places coming from the Dominican Republic. And I used to daydream about Six Flags, and now I'm like 30 minutes away. So just little things like that. that are like, wow. It. So now that I can travel, like I can go to Miami. What?
Right, right.
Like, you know what I'm saying? So, and thinking beyond that, going to Mexico, going to Costa Rica and seeing their culture and how different they are. It's like,
right.
Wow. You know, so that's definitely top one of my hobbies. I love to work out. I've always been a pretty active person. Through high school, I played games, I played sports. I ran track, I played softball. So I work out. It keeps my mind at ease. It's a stress reliever. It's like an outlet for me.
Right.
So it's definitely up there too. And I like to watch documentaries. I like to like learning cool true story things and just anything that is based on true story. I like it. I like learning new things.
It is intriguing. I definitely give you that. There was something you mentioned on the first one. Something I was going to comment on the first thing you said.
From traveling.
Ah, I was going to mention for myself in my own journey with trying to learn Spanish. One of the other things that when you talk about like just the difficulties of being able to, of just trying to learn English, like I can remember one of the things that really grabbed me so much about the, you know, Latino and Hispanic culture was just like the warmth and the love. And it's like, you hear it so casually in people, in English, people say, you know, mi casa, su casa kind of thing. And the thing is like, but people don't understand, like when you go to like some of these countries, like, yo, that's real life. Like when you go in and you meet somebody for the first time, like, yo, that's now your aunt. That's now family now. You know what I'm saying? So like, and I can remember being there with my friend and his family, like, even though I couldn't communicate with them, I just, love is just beyond words. And the thing is, like, I felt so much love and I felt so much warmth and I just wanted to communicate with them, but I couldn't say anything. And I remember, like, it just killed me from the inside. And I remember, like I said, that was one of the things. I got so frustrated. I said, I'm gonna learn this thing. I have to, so very cool. Very, very cool. So just as we go forward, give us like 3 to 4 different pieces of advice on how you would encourage people to continue to win in life.
Okay. So I would probably most definitely say, number one, don't give up.
Okay.
You know, I know it sounds cliche, it's easier said than done, but whatever position you're at right now, it's not where you were at a few years ago.
Right.
So although you might not feel like you're making much progress, you're making progress. Just keep going. You know, the last thing you want to do, I don't know if you, I always see this meme online where there's two miners and they're like chipping away.
Right.
And one is like chipping away and one that's like right about to hit the diamond, he's like turning around.
I've seen it.
And it's like, oh, you're right there. So it's just like, you know, you never know when you're right there. And that alone, it's like, that gives you like, all right, maybe it's not today, it's tomorrow. I know it's tomorrow.
Right.
You know, so just, you know, have that urge and don't give up.
You got to have faith. That's pretty much what you're saying.
Yeah, definitely. You know, have faith and keep going. Think of the reasons why you want to do it in the first place. You know, why is it that you're pursuing this, you know? Does it make you happy, you know? And that alone should make you, you know, want to keep going.
Right.
And another thing I want to say is find an accountability partner, you know, not necessarily someone that has to be with the same mindset of you, not saying that you have to sell your dream to somebody else, but someone that, you know, that can hold you accountable. I can tell, hey, BJ, you know, hey, I'm like, BJ, and I kind of have that right now. So even with me, with this program, with the TEFL program, my friend Ashay, I talked her into it and she also did the certification. So sometimes she'll email me and she'll be like, hey, like, have you looked into any programs? And I'm like, oh, like, you know, I haven't yet, but I haven't even told her. She's already my accountability partner. Because of her, I'm already on my A game trying to see like, all right, I don't want her to ask me again and I don't have nothing again, you know? So just someone that can just go back and touch base with you like, hey, you know, did you finish that thing you told me you were going to do? So just tell someone that you confide with, hey, look, I want to do this. Check up on me in 2 months that I did it, or not even that, you know, check up on me every other day to see, check on my progress. And you know, people that love you and care for you and want to see you win, that's a given. They'll do it.
Of course.
You know, so I feel like an accountability partner, it has helped me throughout the way. people that has checked up on me that I didn't even know had put me into perspective, like, oh my God, like if they're looking at me this way or they're right. counting on me already, like maybe I should just go on and get this bull running. So,
I got you. Yeah, if I could just kind of comment there, I think pretty much what you're saying is, you know, the grind gets tough, you know, and it's those accountability partners, it's those people who kind of, you know, keep you pushing is really what's going to make the difference. You know, iron sharpens iron, you know, and you need people who are going to push you. That's really the only way to get ahead, because complacency, it doesn't take much effort to fall into that position. And once you get in, it can be tough to get out. So I definitely know what you're saying. So I'll let you continue. Anything else in terms of advices on how you'd encourage people?
I will just say, always ask questions. You know, some people might be shy, but then go on the internet. You know, I'm huge. I know Google shouldn't be the first go-to, but typically millennials go on Google. You tell me something, I'll Google it, and I'll do some research. I'll ask questions, you know, and it shows that you care, that, you know, that you're attentive, that this is something that is important to you.
Yeah.
And when you go out of your way to learn something, it sticks.
Right. Yes.
You know, and it's like, it's knowledge that you'll have forever. So if it's something that it's important to you, and you can just ask someone, hey, what do you know about this?
Right.
Little do you know, they might. And this saying goes back to, it's not about who you know, it's who they know.
Right.
So just by getting out there, asking people, just finding different outlets, you just might find the right plug. And you know, just by asking one question, they can say, hey, listen, I don't know, but I know someone that does.
Right.
And the other someone can know someone, and before you know it, you're halfway there.
Right.
You know, so
it's the curiosity. You know, the curiosity is what's going to, like you said, kind of pave the way. You know, I think about kind of which, you know, with you and the certification, it wasn't something that you planned on. It was just a matter of the season we were in. You know, like you said, it just kind of arose. You looked into it, and things just started coming into play. So, you know, just kind of being open, like you said, being open, being curious. You know, you'll find your way. You definitely will find your way. Did you have anything else on that?
No, I mean, that's pretty much it. I feel like having an accountability partner, asking questions, and just having that determination and push. That's all you need, and you're halfway there.
Right. I love it. That's awesome. So what I did was I put together a couple of different questions here that I wanted to go over with you. So I'm just going to go right down the line. So I'll say, while in pursuit of any goal, obviously the journey can get tiring. What do you recommend people do to refresh themselves along the way?
Okay. This is a good one, because personally, I've just started looking into self-care and mental health, and how you need to focus on yourself also along the journey. You want to have the right state of mind. You don't want to be too overwhelmed. And once you get overwhelmed, you kind of get negative. So I would say, you know, take time for yourself. Take time to be with friends. Take time to socialize, and everything has a balance. You know, we can be passionate about something, but still not lose ourselves.
Okay.
So I would probably most definitely tell everyone to just pick a day out of the week where you just turn off your phone and do whatever makes you happy. You know, personally, I'll go to the park, and I have different coloring books, and I would just color. I'll bring some snacks, and it's just me, my coloring books, and voila, you know, just relaxing. And I think that's very important.
I like that.
And something cool too is, like, you know, when I wanted a new car, you kind of look for something like an accessory, like, oh, that would look nice in a car. So kind of look into things that will enhance what you're going for.
Gotcha.
So knowing that I now have the certification, I would love to teach overseas. So what am I doing now? I'm looking into things like that, like, oh, that would look cool.
Right.
Well, that's nice. Right. So looking at other things to do with what you're pursuing can also kind of give you that edge.
Right.
That it's like, well, I can also do this with that. So let me keep on doing it, you know? Right. So that's kind of how you can kind of refresh the love and
keep yourself going.
Yeah, you know, just keep going at it and keep the passion alive.
Right, right. It's important. It really is important because the thing is, like you said, apart from the accountability partner, who else is really going to push you to help you get to where you want to get to? Or I guess I should say, who else is going to do it as good as you can do it for yourself? Who else is going to push you, you know, to get to those places that you want to be more so than you? No, I mean, that's really your desire. So I think, you know, you definitely want to be careful with your own heart, you know, making sure that you're keeping your own self refreshed, you know, just along the way and in that journey. So I love what you said, just being able to, you know, just being able to kind of escape. And one other thing I'll add in there for myself is even like I turn off my social media from time to time. And like, I haven't been as disciplined lately, but I would come out of my social media for the 5 days of the week and just make it like a Friday to Sunday kind of thing. Just because I needed that escape mentally for myself, just to be able to, you know, just to be able to calm down, focus on the week, you know, focus on work. And then even when work is done, you know, just kind of having that time for myself to, you know, do whatever I need to just kind of refresh, you know, maybe sometimes it's just going out for a walk, which is really nice right now because the weather is nice. You know, like you said, that mental health, that self-care, you really can't put a price on it, you know. And the thing is, it looks different for everybody. Obviously, these are only just options that we're sharing with you guys. Really cool. Really cool stuff to keep in mind. The other thing I wanted to ask you is, when you think about this new certification in ESL, what does it mean to you?
So, kind of generally speaking, it just makes me feel like I can actually... And I say actually because of society sometimes makes you feel like you need to have some sort of title to be able to do something.
Gotcha.
And now that I have the certification, I feel like, hey, you know, you can trust me.
Right.
But besides that, I know I can advocate for people that can't.
Right.
You know.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
It makes me feel like, hey, I can really do this. You know, I know enough that I can help you help yourself and hopefully you can help others. And that's kind of how eventually I want things to go. But it just makes me feel like it just is very special to me. And knowing that I can change lives and how my life changed alone, it just makes it very personal. And I don't know, I can't even find the words. It's just like a feeling, you know? It's like I have it and it's like I'm going to do great things with this. And it's just no ifs or buts about it. And it's just a great feeling. And
When I hear, listen to you, what I think about is, I feel like ESL for you is like a bridge.
And yeah.
Like now you have a way, you know, to be able to meet those on the other side who you couldn't meet before, you know, with this new certification, which is awesome, And it makes you, it puts you in a better position to be able to give, you know, as you mentioned that was one of your passions. So really cool stuff. Love that. What are some challenges that you've encountered in your life that have made you a stronger person today?
I don't like this question.
You said you like it.
I don't like it.
Okay.
I mean, it's good. You know, I feel like talking about challenges, like it makes things real. I just want to touch bases, and you know, like some challenges, like they can be hard, but that's what paves the way. That's what kind of gives the meat on the bone,
right.
You know, that's what makes it like, wow, I did it. So yes, I was very much ESL. I came with not knowing not one word of English, and I think that one challenge alone had opened my eyes immensely, knowing that I was able to do that and get through it. I feel like I know everyone has a different journey while learning a new language, but it's very much personal, you know, especially when you're taking out of something that you've known your whole life and you're just kind of placed somewhere where you're just kind of got to fend for yourself. And the feeling of fending for myself was kind of what made me so strong. So not so much with ESL. I just feel like being the only girl too. I feel like, okay, well, now I got to do things my way, or like I can't be with the boy, so I'll do something on my own. So just even when it comes down to making decisions and things like that, I always feel like, all right, well, it's me, myself, and I. So, and I don't know, I feel like coming from not knowing the language and kind of growing and keep going with my life. It just kind of reassured me that, yeah, at the end of the day, I may have all that I am.
Right.
But that's who I am, you know. Right. Like, you know, BJ, you're gonna know me for what you know of me. Right. But everyone has their own their own look on and their own take of what made them
their perspective,
their person. Yeah, they are. Right. Today. And I feel like, you know, just coming out of that with a W and being able to now have the certification and being able to also help someone that it's right now going through the same.
Right.
That's kind of one of the main reasons why I am how I am, and I'm so ready to advocate and help others, and I'm so willingly ready to help regardless.
Gotcha. That's really cool. Yeah. It is really cool. And I agree with you. I was actually just with a friend a week ago from today. One of my friends, he's actually preparing to get married. And me and him were just talking about life and, you know, just kind of just getting, I guess, getting ready for that season that he's getting ready to transition into. And one of the things me and him talked about is we don't call anybody an overcomer who's never overcame anything. And I think that's pretty much what you're saying is, you know, it's the struggles, it's the challenges that we run into. It's kind of what helps to make the person, you know, so not that it doesn't mean that they're comfortable, you know, but there is something to learn if you slow down. It's like, yes, we look for the finish line, but look for the lesson too. So
that's and the journey in between.
Yeah.
You know, having to go to a corner store and just handful of dimes, nickels, and I'm just like, what can I get with this?
Right.
You know, little things like that, you know, make such a difference.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. So obstacles, next question for you. Obstacles in life are inevitable. What's your advice on how to get through life's toughest moments? And this is just generally speaking.
Generally speaking, I would say just roll with it. You know, a lot of things we just don't have control over, although we want to have control over. Things happen in our life that we don't get to choose whether we want it to happen or not. So I would just say, don't dwell on things you can't change. Better focus on what you can.
Right.
So, and leave the rest in God's hands or the universe. Right. But just let it be, let it go, and just do what you can with what you have. I know a lot of people, you know, they get caught up with the negativity, but it's like, okay, this happened, but I'll focus on this instead, and I'll figure that out later on. You know.
Right, absolutely. I think, as you said that, I think about, we can't always control what's going on around us or what somebody does, you know, what somebody else is doing, but we can control us, and we can control how we will respond, and we can control how something, you know, what kind of energy something is channeling on the inside of ourselves. That always is what's within our control. And I think that's good advice too, because sometimes you forget, like you said, and the thing is, when you get so focused on trying to make somebody operate or make somebody go your way 24/7, it can be a little tiring. So, you know, I think, you know, this is definitely something good that's good to keep in mind. When it comes to teaching abroad in another country, what countries would you want to teach in? Talk to us about that.
So, I always said I wanted to visit Colombia.
Okay.
I've always loved their culture.
Okay.
People. Yeah.
I want to visit.
People there. Oh my God, we should go then. We should plan a trip.
Right.
I'll go visit a few schools.
Listen,
you know, you scope out the area.
I'm about to say, yeah, especially if you got to go visit some schools, you let me know. Or if you go out there and you get an assignment, then I just come visit. So,
you know? We might have something cooking up. But yeah, I just love Colombia. I've been dying to visit in general. But like, again, now that I have the certificate, hey, maybe I can really go to Colombia and actually be there longer than just a vacation.
Nice.
So it's like, wow, it's just cool. You know, everything comes together, like you said. And somewhere else I want to teach in DR. I know I'm Dominican, but like, you know, you want to see your people win. You want to give back. And Dominicans are bright.
Yes.
They're smart, and we always come up with things. And I just know that if I was to teach English in the Dominican Republic, it will open up so many doors. And I know great people will come out of the Dominican Republic. So just anywhere that I can make a difference, sign me up. But if I got to pick, You can send me to Colombia first.
Okay. Nice. I mean, and what's cool about Dominican Republic too is you already know the culture. And you know,
yes,
because this is where you're from. So
yes.
You know, that's definitely a plus right there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as you
and it's, yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm just gonna say it is a plus. You know, they're comfortable. I'm basically, you know, like I can teach you. I know
right.
what it is. We know the same lingo, so it makes it that much personal. So
cool. Yeah, mm-hmm. I love that. I was gonna say the other thing that you mentioned too, like you talk about like helping your people. Like I think about, I was actually listening to an interview last week. There's this gentleman that works for ESPN. His name is Stephen A. Smith, and I heard him say, because somebody was, this is back towards the end of 2019, coming into 2020 when he got his new contract. So he signed like a 5-year contract for like $60 million. So he's basically bringing in about $12 million a year, which is a lot for somebody doing with that kind of work that he does. You know, but definitely, you know, has done, you know, the groundwork to work his way up to where he is now. But one of the things he said, obviously, yes, I'm taking care of financially. Yes, I understand that. He said, but I also understand that with this kind of position that I have today comes the responsibility of being able to help bring up others who wouldn't be able to, who maybe are not where I am, or maybe on their way, who he said, or maybe, you know, creating a path for maybe those who, to make sure that other people don't have to grind the same way I did. And I think that's kind of what you're talking about too. You know, it's about being able to get back. It's about being able to, you know, make life easier. You know,
lessening the load.
Yeah. For other people. I mean, you know, that's what it's about. So speaking of life, that kind of channels me right into my next question. Life. We all know that life has an expiration date on it. Every one of you guys that is listening to me right now, eventually a time is going to come when we will no longer be here. So Haiti, I ask you, when it's all said and done, what do you want people to remember about Haiti?
So I hope they have their own perspective, and it's great.
That's okay.
But I want them to remember me by my relentless attitude, which I think, BJ, you're very much familiar with.
Uh-huh.
My big heart.
Right.
And I want people to remember me by just always wanting to make a difference and trying, even though I'm not perfect, I try to be the best that I can. Mm-hmm. And I just always want to be the change that I want to see in the community and in everyone, just generally speaking.
Right. I love what you just said there, being the change that you want to see. That's pretty cool. In terms of this idea of what, like, you know, it's good to encourage people to change, but let's be it first. And nothing like an example where people can obtain it. People can see it or they can hear it first, you know, which actually helps to encourage people. So I love that.
Yeah, so hopefully I live up to those expectations and I can do some great things with the certification. And I'll definitely give you some details of the online course that I took. I'll give you the website and I'll give you some information on the nonprofit organization in Trent. If anybody knows anybody that needs help, I'm more than happy to help.
Cool.
If I said anything today, is that I'm willing to help and feel free to come.
That's what it's about, man. That's what it's about. I'm also going to put Haiti's email in the comments of the episode, guys, in case, like you said, like she just mentioned, if you guys have any other questions, you know, anything, you know, it's good to just pick people's brains, you know, just talk to people, connect to people, connect with people. You know, it'll definitely be beneficial for you. And Haiti's a good person. I know she's got some good stuff to be able to pour into people. And I know you said that you hope to have impact, but I know you had. I know.
Thank you.
I'm telling you what I know. You know, it's funny, guys. I can even remember when Haiti told me about this program. It was the last Sunday of January. And the only reason why I remember that is because of the friend that I was with last week. It was the same day. This is the day that he proposed to his fiance. So it was the last Sunday in January. I was actually spending the night with her brother. And I spent the night over at her place. I woke up the next morning. I saw her in the morning. And I asked her, I said, how are you doing? And, you know, what are you up to nowadays? And she told me about this program that she was in, that we're talking about now for the ESL. And I was just like, I was just so blown away. I really was. I mean, and it's like, you know, Haiti, like, I don't know if I ever told you this, but like you really inspire me. I have to tell you the truth. Like, you really do inspire me. There's even, like, I would even say part of it, it's hard for me to even put it in words because it's more just like a feeling. But it's like when I talk to you, when I'm around you, there's just like an aura about you that I just sense. it's just powerful. It's world changing, you know, and I'm just happy to, you know, just to be able to see it all, like, just come about, you know. I'm happy to be able to see you, you know, just develop and grow into the person that, you know, God is making you be, you know, for his name, mm-hmm. and, you know, and knows that you're going to be able to reach and touch. So it's just beautiful to watch. So I just say to you, just continue to blossom.
Thank you.
You know, continue to be that, you know, just a wonderful person that you are. And if nobody else tells you, Katie, I believe.
Aw, thank you so much, BJ. You're the best.
I believe.
You're the best. I love you very, very much. You know, your family, my family is your family. So my house is always your house, and our doors and our hearts are open. So
I appreciate it. I appreciate
it. And thank you so much for having me. I know I probably talk a little too much.
No,
but...
listen, a lot of good stuff you mentioned. A lot of good stuff. So, you know, we're just glad to have you on. And I thank you for joining 94 Feet. For anybody else, again, that is just new to today's episode, if you like what you've heard today, again, I encourage you to please subscribe. I will definitely be back with more content. Again, Haiti's information will be in the comments. Haiti, any other closing thoughts?
That's it. Just kind of, I want to encourage everyone to just learn something new.
Thank you. And we appreciate you for coming on and sharing with us what your story was and what it is that you've done with it. So as always, guys, I thank you for your time. This has been 94 Feet. Your host, B.O.D., here with you. I'll talk to you soon.